This has been an important issue to the city. The city is just under a population of 1,700, and we are struggling to try to get and even maintain our current commercial businesses in town here. We, in the last just few months, we've had our Greenway service station closed. We've also had our Granary retail store closed and go just to seasonal now for operation, and this is the largest structure in our community, County of Olmsted, due to the lack of commercial development in our community. We have a number of empty storefronts in our downtown. We are working very hard to try to maintain what we currently have. 95% of our community commutes out of our area, so we do not have those additional dollars in the town. And also part of it has to do with the fact that we have a lack of jobs for them to stay in our community to work. We have lost an opportunity to bring in a retail store that approached us, and they asked us if we had TIF due to the size of our community. They felt they needed that in order to take the risk in being in a smaller community of our size. After we informed them we did not have TIF, that opportunity left. We have had a number of other instances of the same type of experience over the last 4 years where they will come and find out, do we have the capability to provide TIF on business development? And when they have found out no, they've gone outside the 10-mile area to get that opportunity in other communities. We are looking to develop more jobs in our community, help manage our property taxes for our citizens in here by the development of this. We have some opportunities that are out there right now that the mayor will talk a little bit more about, but we have some opportunities that are coming up that we can take advantage of to develop an area that we have designated as a new commercial area. Right now it's a bean field, but we have a couple of very interested parties, but both of them feel the nature of the development, the size of the town, requires TIF to make this project go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Constant.
Good morning. My name is Wes Bussell. I'm the mayor of Eola. I'm going to follow a little bit on Steve. As a city, we have zoned approximately 123 acres of commercial industrial land. At this time, this bill is very crucial to us. We have a very credible developer who is in the process and very close to signing off and purchasing 23 of them acres for, I think there's up to 19 commercial lots, including a larger hotel lot. The developer is just, I just recently talked to him, and we have this a credible developer that has his own financing, but if he wants to keep it all commercial, he's about $500,000 short of even coming close to a break-even point, and we feel that the TIF would bridge that gap. If we're not able to get TIF or another way to bridge that gap for him, half of that acreage will become multifamily housing is in his proposal. Part of the reason we're here was alluded to by my two previous colleagues here. Rochester's moving to the east and Yoder's moving to the west. We can't up and pick up our city and move it further east so we can come to the 10-mile limit. And we have lost several opportunities because they go 5 miles further down the road to Dover or, say, Charles, another 5 miles, and they're able to put these use TIF to help with the commercial district. So as I had a recent conversation with Representative Slidham on March the 8th, recognizing the importance of jobs and commercial growth in our state, this bill will help us as a small city of 1,700 try to incubate and bring business and commercial ventures to our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Is there Representative Simpson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would be to Representative Demmer. Is there any feedback at all from the City of Rochester on this? Do they oppose it, or do they have any comments?
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simpson, yeah, thank you for your question. In your in the letters that were handed out, you may have gotten, I got a an email, actually, from Gary Smith. He's the executive director of Rochester Area Economic Development. It's called READY, and they support this, and also the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce supports it. I had hoped either had them testify or had a letter from them. I didn't get that, but they're fully supportive.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from members? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Demmer, listening to your testifiers, I can see the problem and why you want to try to do something here. The concern I have is that, in general, we've tried not to have retail get tips, if we can do that, because that's just competing across borders for something that probably doesn't need a subsidy, because, as you know, tip is a subsidy. I know that Outstate Minnesota has been hurt so badly by the LGA, not being fully funded. Would your city that you're speaking to here now do better if the LGA just got fully funded, or if they could do TIF? I mean, it seems that, is this really about trying to lure jobs there through TIF, or is it that you don't have the tax base, and that if you could just get LGA for those city tax budgets, you'd be better off? Do the testifiers have an opinion on that?
Mr. Gunstead?
Let me try to answer that, Representative. Before LGA was being cut, we still had an exodus from our downtown. We still had the empty storefronts. It was still very much a challenge from that point of view. We're trying to help moderate our taxes for our residents in our community. And as you know, the best way to do it is to have commercial development. It's very hard to bring a big manufacturing company to our small town. So the first step we have to get is to try to bring in some more of the commercial side of the businesses that we can bring into this community.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, I think LGA, in my estimation, is really not intended for this sort of economic development. I think small communities such as I represent, and not just Eota and Byron and Orinoco and Elgin, but other communities, you're probably talking $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, maybe $100,000 that they need for their infrastructure, they need for the things they're doing in their communities. This sort of development, and the fact that it is retail, I think you have to be a small city designation to be able to use it for retail. And that's kind of what we're asking here. We're not changing that designation, actually. Once their community, and these communities are all growing. A couple of them are probably going to hit 5,000 or more within the next couple of 3 years. Byron in particular probably will. I'm not sure about Eota or the other two, possibly not. But, that specifically the law with small cities designated as using retail, I think is good judgment. Eota, for example, does not have any retail basically at all. And they need this to get something started. Now, in a larger community, I think where you have retail, where you have other things going on, I would agree with you. So I think, comparing LGA and what they would have from that and the uses of LGA to what this would do for their economic development, I think it's a little bit apples and oranges in my thought.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Chairman Vandeveer and Representative Demmer. And I know, I'm sorry I was coming in when you were beginning, and I know that Representative Welty is working on this with you as well, and I think I heard you mention something about that, and I know he's expressed a concern about this as well. I'm trying to... When I was coming in late, did one of you say that Olmsted County has one of the highest tax rates already? Or somebody said you are already paying really high taxes?
City of Eota.
Okay. Why? And that is just plain old because it's all residential? Is that pretty much it? And is the county tax base there high as well? Are they getting burdened, twice really? How is the county tax level for that city?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincheski, I can answer just in broad generalities. Because of the tremendous growth in Rochester specifically, as well as throughout the county, quite frankly, their taxes aren't going up. Even in Rochester, got hit pretty good with the LGA cuts. Even with that, I think their total increase in taxes was moderated such by their growth. So there's a lot of things happening. Quite frankly, there's a lot of transportation funding challenges right now, as you might expect with 52. So that's kind of the county-wide is county has to help with the corollary, the roads that connect to 52 and that sort of thing. But I think in general, the growth of that county, Rochester, and that county in general, it really is helping to fuel their need for revenues. And so I think they're probably in line with others, even though there is increasing demands there.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 133? Seeing none, the chair will lay over House File 133 for possible inclusion in the Property and Local Tax Division report. Next bill on the agenda, thank you, Representative Demmer, is House File 176. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Nelson, do you want to move House File 176?
I will move it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, House File, Representative Nelson moves House File 176 for possible inclusion in the Property and Local Tax Division report. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The purpose of this legislation is to help a local community, Wabasha, Minnesota, so that the city will be promoting to increase the value of the city itself as a growing community. I have with me at the present time the mayor of Wabasha, and I would like for him to state his name for the record and then introduce the other two individuals that will make a presentation. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Representative Dempsey, and thank you, Chair. At this time, my name is Peter Kloss. My first term as mayor. I'm a retired school administrator, and I was bored, so I decided to run for mayor. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I brought with me a couple of things. You have a packet of materials here that represents our wishes. We have today with us our city administrator, David Schmidt, and Chuck Dufresne is part of the development team with FITGERS. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to our city administrator, and we'll certainly entertain any questions that you may have regarding this request. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Chair, committee, the city of Wabasha was before you last year, actually the tax committee last year. We started with a developer approximately 6 years ago in redeveloping the site on the waterfront. On the front of your packet, if you look just below the bridge, there's a clear area that used to be a very large ConAgra mill. Unfortunately, that developer was unable to financially continue with the project. The city of Wabasha struck a relationship with FITGERS out of Duluth, and Chuck Dufresne is a representative of the FITGERS development team. One of the downsides of switching developers is you have a five-year rule. Unfortunately, the past developer essentially ran through the clock. This time frame ran out June of last year. We were before the tax committee in both the House and the Senate. We were included in the tax omnibus bill, and we're back before you again this year.
Great process, isn't it?
Yes, sir. But we respect it. To the city of Wabasha, conservatively, this is an $11 million project on the waterfront. We've actually had to go back with the development team and turned it into a two-tier process in which they're actually starting condominium construction. Hopefully, we're in the planning board process right now. And there is a site plan, the condominium project on the lower portion of the site plan. the TIF would only be received by the hotel project, which would be Fichter's of Wabasha. So it's a very classy hotel for the city of Wabasha. And lucky for us, it will be attached to the National Legal Center, which most people are familiar with. And we are in the process of working with Urban Works on the final design of the Eagle Center as well. So it's with that that the city of Wabasha would respectfully request inclusion in this year's tax bill to extend both the term of the district and the five-year rule. And we're all three of us are here ready to answer any and all questions that you may have. We'll attempt. Chuck, do you have any?
Hi. No comments. Okay, thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm having a little trouble catching up to speed here. Why do we need to extend? Why do we need to extend the one thing to exempt the 5 year or to give to grant an additional duration of 5 years? But why do we need to exempt the 5 year rule to 10?
Sir, because currently the five-year rule is zeroed out. We have no additional years. It was zeroed out in June of this year, this past year. So what we're requesting is essentially a new five-year rule so that the project was demolished, but now we have a development coming on board, and that development will take some time to be constructed.
And, Mr. Chairman, one of the things we obviously look at in the process is we exempt you, and then who comes in behind you?
Most certainly.
So why is the situation of such magnitude that an exemption would apply here but not for others?
Certainly, Representative Krenke. Essentially, the city of Wabasha is in the situation that the project will not go forward. It is integral to the downtown development, and it's attached to the National Legal Center. We believe the combination of the two projects together is very important for the city of Wabasha, and that's why we were here last year to get this through, and we're successful to a point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The I remember the debate last year with regard to the National Eagle Center, and that was that the local match had not been met after a period of 5 years, I believe it was, and there was legislation here asking for the additional time for the match to be met. Has the match for the National Eagle Center been met by private funds?
Representative Krenke, actually the match was met last year. The issue was the monies were not spent. We had a period of time the monies were allocated, but they were not spent by the city because the city was not ready to proceed forward. The match was in place at the time of the legislation last year.
My mistake. So, Mr. Chairman, so what is the status currently of the National Eagle Center construction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krenke, we have worked with Urban Works. We have final drawings for the National Eagle Center. We're currently on a capital campaign for the anticipated will be a concurrent construction project with the hotel, which would be anticipated spring of 06.
Mr. Chairman, can we hear from the developer about the viability of the project from the developer standpoint and what the developer's timeline is and financing is?
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Chuck Dufresne. I am the Director of Real Estate Services with Zeman Construction Company. We're providing development and construction services for the Fichter's Hotel Management Group with regard to this project. taking, if I could, the issues in the order that I remember them, the viability of this project without TIF is essentially nil. The reason being, not so much the project or the building itself, but the construction of this hotel requires a significant amount of investment in public improvements, which the city itself cannot justify the expense. But we're talking about streets, we're talking about utilities. And to a certain degree, TIF will be used to offset land cost on the Mississippi River being extremely expensive. As Mr. Schmidt stated, none of the TIF proceeds are going into the condominium component of the project. It's really all aimed at the public improvements that are collateral to the development of the hotel. The hotel is as anyone who's stayed at Fitgers in Duluth will know, we're talking about an upscale boutique-type hotel. It is not going to have a flag. By that I mean it's not going to be a Marriott or whatever. It's going to be a Fitgers hotel based on the fact that it's directly on the riverfront. A limited number of rooms, approximately 50. And to make the kind of investment that's required here, the building itself is justifiable, but the land cost being directly on the waterfront and the construction of the roads in the area and the utilities that service the site make the project unworkable. Timeline. Timeline is largely dependent on you folks. I would like to be having somebody in sweeping it up right now, getting ready to open the doors about the 15th of April, which is where we were on our development schedule last year. However, one of the things about a resort hotel is it needs to open at a specific time of the year. It doesn't do much good to open a hotel that's really focused on river activities in November. So with an approximately 11-month construction period, what we'd like to be able to do is get underway and have the project open March, April, maybe the 1st of May of any year. And what that means is probably we would start construction a year from now and have it open a year from then, based on the timeline of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe for Mr. Schmidt or the mayor, does Eagle Center pay property tax?
No, it doesn't. It's a nonprofit organization, and it does not.
So Mr. Merritt, how does this generate tax revenue then? Is it the development surrounding the Eagle Center that you're looking at?
That's correct. That is correct. The city will actually own the building for the Eagle Center, and the Eagle Center board will actually operate the center itself.
Representative...
I'm Rukavina.
Rukavina.
This brings back memories, Representative Dempsey, because I can't remember if it was the 96 or the 98 session where I bought off Representative Ossoff in a bonding bill with Oskop, with the first $1 million, I believe. Was it 96 or 98? And I'm surprised you've gotten quite a bit of state money since then for the center, but you still haven't begun construction or met your match. I'm just curious how much, incidentally, members, that year I tried to buy off Frankie too, but with some national shooting sport thing, I think, up in your area, but you just couldn't be bought for it. No, I don't think so. But anyway, how much have we given you in state dollars for that, and where are you at on your match, dollar for dollar?
All right, excuse me, are you talking about the National Legal Center?
Yes.
I could add, The bond bill had $500,000, and that's why we were before you all scrambling last year to recover the bond bill of $500,000. In 1998, the city of Wabasha themselves actually levied $650,000 for a match of that. On top of that, the city of Wabasha has been successful in obtaining approximately, I think it's $428,000 from the federal government. On top of that, private donations of about $300,000 at this point. And that's with the volunteer board, and now with a brand new administration, the last 2 years, it's become a primary focus of the city to get this board working in a proper manner. And we've actually hired professional, worked with them to hire a professional fundraiser that has developed a plan that's now being implemented. And seems to be working and generating the funds necessary. The final project will probably be approximately $3 million for the Eagle Center. Sir.
Representative Rupavina.
No, I'm just curious, and it seems like you've put in a lot of effort and local effort, and you know, I have no problem with that. It seems like they've done their homework and taxed themselves to help match it, so I'm fine with that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Any other questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 176? Seeing none, the Chair will lay over House File 176 for possible inclusion in the Property and Local Tax Division Committee report. Thank you, Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before the next bill is heard, I'm looking through these cities' information for tax increment financing bills, these forms that have to be filled out. And, you know, of course, when you put together some of these tax increment financing bills and so forth, it's going to take a number of people with expertise. It's very complex. And I see that in one area you look for, there's a question to name the telephone number of a municipal official or a lawyer, financial consultant, or whatever, and they list those. And then it talks about lobbyists, and it asks to also identify those, but then it says list the amount of money that has been paid. And I guess I'm wondering why you're asking, or whoever is asking for the amount that's being paid to a retained lobbyist, and yet for a lawyer or someone else that is also needed to put together a TIF, Mr. Chair.
I do.
You want to take a run at that, Representative?
Well, I do.
Real quickly, though, we have
to. Representative Abrams had what we would call, and I can't say it publicly, but on the range we'd call it a certain thing for lobbyists, you know, especially that were doing work for TIF districts. So I think maybe Mr. Michaels can help us here. But
well, I think
he had a lot to do with this form, and we've had the debate where especially publicly employed lobbyists, Ms. Representative Abrams has gone after them in tax committee, that you may recall, on a few occasions. So I think that's the history behind it, but maybe Mr. Michaels doesn't want to get involved in this.
Representative Mark, but we didn't think we could improve on the work of our esteemed former chair in putting this form together.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Mark. I think it's totally irrelevant to it myself, but I mean, then if you're going to be, you know, consistent, you should ask how much you're paying the attorneys, because usually around here it seems to me the attorneys make all better than the lobbyists, and especially if they're attorney lobbyists, then they really make all good. But that's
Mr. Chair,
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, and
are they attorney lobbyists?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess there seems to be a real inconsistency there, and also, you know, a lot of the outstate cities, which may not have as easy access down here as far as mayors and that being able to travel 240 miles and so forth, a lobbyist is going to be very important. It seems inconsistent with information you would need for tax increment financing.
Well, Representative Marquardt, I didn't look at that until you brought it up, but Might be a good question. Representative Lincheski.
On that issue, I'm glad you brought that up, actually. And I think Representative Rukavina is right. I wish Representative Abrams were here right now and he could defend the form. And I think the form, to have a form is a good idea because it allows the committee to look at everything in a uniform fashion. But I hear the point about what are different people getting paid. I thought part of the problem is when somebody is retained to lobby for a city, you know, that whole city, then how do they get retained to also get another chunk of change to fight for a TIF district? I mean, they're already being lobbying for that city. Shouldn't they just be doing that for that city? But what I would say, a concern I've always thought, and I think Mr. Michael could comment on this, that it's really unfair in tax increment financing, I think, that the issue that Representative Marquardt has raised is there are cities, say, like the city I represent, who when you look at, say, what are the top 20 people in that city get paid? A couple million dollars. I mean, there's some top fiscal expertise and analysis that goes on, and really, and so they don't need to hire lobbyists because they've really got, you know, a bunch of folks making $100,000 a year who can pore over the documentation, and they can really come here with pretty sophisticated financial proposals. And then other cities who exactly have no access to that, and it really is unfair in that if you're a lot of these smaller cities and in towns in greater Minnesota, I mean, you don't have people who got their master's degree in public finance working for you. So they are at a disadvantage. I mean, I understand the problem, and I think that
members,
I don't know how you solve it. It's
yeah,
just a problem.
Representative Lincheski, if you have suggestions for the form, I mean, I'll be happy to look at that. We're not stuck on this. We used it because I think it was used previously and seemed to work real well, but you know, we can talk about that, but we do have to move on. We have to be done by 11:30, and we've got some people that have came a ways to be here. So, but you know, we can talk about that. Certainly, it's.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that we hire a lawyer to fix the form.
Lobbyists couldn't do that. Okay, the next bill on the agenda, if I can find it in this pile, is Senate File 699. Representative Bernardi.
Mr. Chair, before Representative Bernardi starts, I see that this bill made the papers.
Representative Rukavina, would you like to move House File 699?
I'll move House File 726.
Or Senate File 699.
Pass and put in for possible inclusion in the.
Representative Rukavina moves Senate File 699 for possible inclusion in the Property and Local Tax Division report. Representative Bernardi.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With us today are the people working on the Medtronic project in the community of Moundsview. I want to thank you for this hearing today. This is good for Minnesota. And I want to let you know I'm here because Governor Pawlenty wants this project. And Representative Rukavina will be happy that it's not a Job Z project, I'm sure. And I want to let you know that this was drafted by the city, and it was modeled after the New Brighton proposal that was brought forward to the legislature last year that didn't end up happening. I wasn't involved in the drafting of it, but my goal is to bring jobs to Minnesota, high-paying jobs, that Medtronic will be bringing with this project. We are flexible on how the language will be drafted. The final drafting, we are working with Representative Abrams, Representative Alan Chesky, as well as Joe Michaels to come up with a draft of this proposal that will move us forward and bring these jobs to Minnesota. So with that, I would like to introduce our first testifier, and it's Don Hagman. And Don can let you know what his title is with Medtronic, and he will tell you more about the plans they plan to do in Minnesota with this project. Thank you.
Mr. Kaiser, could you state your name for the record, for the tape, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Don Hagman. I'm Director of Real Estate and Construction for Medtronic. On behalf of my company, I want to thank you for your time today and for your ongoing service to the state of Minnesota. The reason we're here today is very simple. Medtronic is growing jobs, and we're growing them in the state faster than we basically can house them, on an average almost 300 a year. And if we continue to grow jobs here, we want to and we need to make a long-term decision and come up with a solution. I sent there's a handout, and I'm going to give you some perspective of some historical perspectives of Medtronic, where we are currently and where we think we are going to go into the future. And there's some facts and figures on those, that document that you see in front of you. In 1999, Medtronic made a decision to construct our 460,000 square foot world headquarters campus in Fridley. At that time, we said that our need was to driven by a requirement to add 1,000 jobs over the next 5 years in the Twin Cities. The actual over that time frame was close to 2,000 jobs, which is nearly double what we projected. This new proposed solution would become the world headquarters for our cardiac rhythm management division. It's our largest business unit. It's the people who make the cardiac pacemakers. It's where we really got our start. Was our first product. Initially, we planned to build an 820,000 square foot facility, which in itself would be the single largest building Medtronic has anywhere in the world, and the largest project of its kind in our history by a factor of almost two. It's an enormous project. The site will be master planned to provide a potential for 1.5 million square feet for long-term growth opportunities. So we really feel that we've got this initial phase, but you know, we're really bullish about our future, and we think going forward, you know, there's potential to grow beyond that. Last year, we worked closely with a local economist from Minnesota who analyzed the economic impact of Medtronic on the state. Several of the highlights are, of our 33,000 employees worldwide, approximately 6,800 are in Minnesota. Our current direct annual spend in the state contributes $1 billion to the economy. In fact, as a perspective here, I've got a 59-page document of all the vendors that we do business with in Minnesota, and there's 3,400 different companies that we do business with in the state. The average salary in the state is $70,200 per year plus benefits. These are good, high-paying jobs. Going forward, our proposed project will potentially provide 2,000 new high-paying jobs in Minnesota by 2012, which was a 31% increase over our current headcount in the state. Project construction costs and equipment purchases over 4 years on this project and then subsequent upgrades to other Twin City facilities would drive investment activity of $250 million, with an average of 250 direct jobs from local contractors during that four-year period. So there's a lot of hard hat type jobs that we'll create as part of this. Macro level economic impact on expansion of the state would result in an additional $495 million a year annually and 4,300 direct and indirect jobs that are created as part of this impact of this project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in closing, I hope my enthusiasm for this opportunity to grow world-class jobs and world-class benefits in Minnesota is shared by all of you, as it is shared by Ramsey and Anoka counties, Moundsview, Shoreview, and Blaine, with which we are currently closely working. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Hageman. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Hageman, what are you using? You've got the investment activity of $250 million. What's the actual construction? The dollar amount of the construction project? I didn't hear you say that.
The construction of the 820,000 square foot facility? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, answer that. We don't have specific drawings at this time or design. We're estimating that it'll be in excess of $100 million for the hard construction costs of the facility.
Including the material and labor.
Of the facility, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and to answer that, that's the hard construction cost of the shell and the interior improvements in the facility. On top of that is things like furniture, fixtures, equipment, computers, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Hageman, is it? Yes. What is the multiplier you're using on your full-time jobs? Because everybody uses different numbers. So your direct jobs are 250, so well, you come to 4,300.
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the economist that we worked with, I believe it's a multiplier 1.3, which is, I understand, we've done some of these things in other states, and this is a relatively conservative multiplier, especially for the salary that we're looking at. But what that would suggest is there would be 2,000 direct jobs and 2,600 indirect jobs that would be created. Things such as, you know, restaurants, home building, all those things that the ripple effect of the expansion.
Mr. Hageman, what's the situation with MnDOT right now as far as their land there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've been working the last week or so, a couple of weeks, on what's called the reverter bill, and there's been several things that have been happening there. We're working out a solution right now where we are willing to pay a fair value for that reverter property, and I think that's being analyzed as far as the dollar amount.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Krenke.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year there was a significant discussion. I think the governor even talked about the requirement to, or the potential, at least, of having a special session to assist in sight. Can you give us some history as to why we're here 12 months later talking about yet a different site?
Mr. Hageman?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's it. You're very this is correct. We were looking at another site a year ago. Since that time, we were made aware of this opportunity in Moundsview, which, as we compared and looked at the different alternatives, this appeared to be an option that was preferred over the initial option. So at this point, that is Moundsview is our project of choice at this point in time if we can put the deal together.
Maybe for Representative Burnett. Representative Krenke, do you have a follow-up?
Chairman, I guess the question is that have they, what is there if... there's a problem with the reverter language or some other issues with regard to this legislation? Are they going to look at yet another site? Or, I mean, I think Representative Rukavina has said that they got some land up on the range there. IRRB.
IRRB loan underneath
it. Yeah, they don't, if they go to the IRRB, they don't have to mess around with coming here to the legislature. They just hand out the money up there.
Is that better than Job Z?
I think so.
Is this Bioport?
So I guess, I mean, Mr. Chairman, I mean, in a serious situation here, I mean, it, you know, that as I said, this was elevated to the level that the governor was talking about calling a special session, and then, as I said, just a matter of a few months later, we're looking at a different proposal. I'm wondering if the Medtronic is, you know, is this a must-do, and obviously, as I said, there's serious questions not only about the reverter, but when we talk about TIF language, we might as well throw the TIF book out if we're going to start. I don't think there's anything here that meets even close to a blighted clause. So I guess I'd like to hear from somebody about. I mean, this is about the TIF piece of the proposal. Why do we need to throw out the book on TIF in order to do this project?
Representative Bernardi.
Mr. Chair and Representative Krenke, we are working with Joel Michaels and Representative Abrams and Representative Lipchetsky to come up with other options that would be better for the state in which to pass this bill out.
Representative Krenke.
Mr. Chairman, maybe some of the members who are newer to the body don't remember my previous service on local government and the tax committee, but yeah, I know. A lot of other people trying to forget too. It's printing for Congress, Representative Rickley. Anyway, the Representative Abrams is a pussycat on TIF legislation compared to what I've been in the past and what I hope we will be in the future. So these proposals impact taxes. Obviously, they spread the tax base to other properties, number one. They cost school districts money. The Moundsview School District, maybe we should ask that question, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bernardi. What's the impact to the Moundsview School District under this TIF proposal?
Mr. Chair and Representative Prinke, Aaron Bachman from the City of Moundsview will be able to answer that question for you.
Right, Mr. Chair, Representative Van Devere, my name is Aaron Bachman. I'm the Economic Development Coordinator here. In reference to the issue on schools, this property has been tax-exempt for a lengthy period of time. This project takes the property from tax-exempt to taxable. Ramsey County, the Moundsview School District, and the city would receive the taxes from the taxable base value of the property, and is projected that over 25 years this would amount to over $4 million. We're able to do that because currently this is tax exempt, and this base will be a value that will contribute to those three jurisdictions. Additionally, during the life of the TIF district, the project would provide a projected $25 million to the statewide school fund. So there would be some benefits that would be occurring to that. In terms of your other question, Representative Krenke, Mr. Chairman, there are other benefits, I think, for adopting this particular legislation. It's located in the northeast corner of the city of Moundsview. It would allow for expenditure increment within a specific area outside the boundaries of the city of Moundsview for specific costs. It would allow Medtronic to be reimbursed over $14 million net present value for costs associated with the development of the campus. Qualified costs include land acquisition, parking, wetland mitigation, soils correction, site utilities, etc., and those total in excess of $25 million. So if you look at the difference there, there will be more costs than increment. It allows for a no frozen tax rate, allows for inclusion of the property in a redevelopment TIF district. Such a district is needed to generate sufficient increment to help close the gap. It allows for one or more TIF districts to be created under the special legislation before the end of 2019. Why is that important? Multiple districts are needed for multiple phases. If their phase two begins, for example, in year 2011, for example, there would be less years available for increment. So that's another benefit for this particular project. In terms of other areas, I won't reiterate what has already been said, but I would say that from our vantage point from the city of Moundsview, this is an exceptional project, creating exceptional jobs, the exact type of jobs that we need in this state.
Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Point are the discussions with Anoka County? Obviously, this property borders, it's on the county line between Ramsey County and Anoka County. My understanding is Anoka County wasn't particularly pleased with this proposal in the context of there was no money to Anoka County for the upgrade of the County Road J. And secondly, the bridge, County Road J bridge on 35W has been an issue for several years in the fact that it is under capacity and needs replacement. So what will happen to the bridge in County Road J and 35W?
Representative Krenke, Chair, We have been diligently involving our neighboring communities in this process since the last fall. We've been involving Blaine and Shoreview, Anoka County, and Ramsey County. So every step of the way, we've had multiple transportation stakeholders meetings. In the case of the city of Moundsview, we have been undertaking an AUAR, which is an environmental assessment process, looking at the transportation impacts. That was probably the single biggest issue related to the project. I also give credit to Medtronic. They've hired a consultant also that did a very in-depth traffic study looking at the recommendations for the improvements to County Road J, 35W bridge, as you alluded to, and other components to the roads. The study came back and basically indicated what areas should be improved. I would definitely say that Anoka has been part of that process from the very beginning. We've tried to accommodate where we can. We have letters of support from the city of Blaine. We have letters of support from the city of Shoreview. Ramsey County, I believe, adopted a letter of support yesterday. So I think we've been progressing in terms of support from the other units of government. We've been trying to address the concerns in terms of what is the best layout for improvements, turning lanes, and so forth. Maybe, Don, you want to add from Medtronic's perspective on the roads.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, actually, no, I don't have a lot to add to that, Aaron. That was a very nice overview of the situation. My sense is that all the meetings that we've had with the few counties and the three cities, that things are very positive. And everybody's, you know, sees the big picture, and that's how this is a win-win for everyone. You know, some of the road changes will clearly, if you look at and the traffic studies, most of the need is driven by other requirements as far as for growth in the general area. Blaine has one of the highest growing cities in the metro area as far as for residences. So there's a lot of additional traffic, and again, this becomes, as I understand it, a very much a win-win situation.
Well, might have been a nice explanation, but didn't answer the question, Mr. Chairman. Number one, as Anoka County signed off, Ramsey County, obviously, but the question is, has Anoka County signed off on this project? Are they in support of the project, Mr. Chairman?
We've been certainly in discussions, Representative Krenke, with Kate Garwood and other folks there. At this point, I don't believe there's been a resolution adopted by Anoka County.
The second question, then, again, Mr. Chairman, is that if I understand what you were explaining, the process, we know that County Road J is undersized. We know the bridge at on 35W and County Road J is undersized. The question is, how much is the city of Moundsview going to contribute to upgrading the road and upgrading the bridge, particularly in the fact that you're asking the state to give deed to the land of the city? So how much money is the city going to put up to upgrade the County Road J and the bridge at 35W?
Representative Krenke, members of the committee, Mr. Chair, at this point, there is not a specific dollar. We've been in negotiations with Medtronic in terms of the major financial components. Some of the things that we have to spend money on include paying off the debt related to the golf course, which is significant, buying out the signs, the billboard signs that were just put up that we now have to buy out, other infrastructure costs related to water and sewer. So I think we're willing to do our fair share in terms of road improvements. We actually border less than 25% of the road improvement areas here. So in terms of other communities, Blaine and Shoreview would have a higher percentage of the actual roads. But we're willing to do our fair share.
Well, Mr. Chairman, fair share doesn't seem to me, as I said, you don't want to pay the state for the land cost, and then you don't want to pay you want to bring 2,000 jobs to the area, and you want the tax base, but you don't want to help the state and the surrounding communities with the influx of jobs to pay for the infrastructure that's necessary.
Representative Simpson.
Being new on the committee, this might go to Representative Leshinsky or Mr. Hines, I'm not sure. How does this compare to our Best Buy program we did out in Bloomington?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, everyone thinks that's in Bloomington. It's actually in Richfield. But it's right across the street from Bloomington. And I think it's fair to ask that question because the blight argument is complicated for this project. And I think we all learned in the Best Buy deal that there was a lot of things that could have been done better. What I would say, listening to all this and Representative Krinke's line of questioning here, and you're raising issues as well, and I think Representative Bernardi is trying to do something that I think most of us in the state know that Medtronic's a company we want to keep here. Representative Bernardi knows that I don't like her bill at all. And I think the Senate made a mistake passing this bill because I think there's a lot of problems with how this bill is designed, and I think you've hit on that, Representative Simpson. But I do think the governor and Representative Bernardi and the advocates for Medtronic here want to do something. I think she's indicated that she really wants to be flexible and find a way to do that. So I think there's some folks who'd like to try to assist in that and get something more acceptable. I don't know that Representative Krinke would ever get all the way there, but I think we could get maybe something that could work through the committee process under Representative Vandeveer. But I do want to add, if I may, to the testifiers, Representative Krinke is sort of going through a process here to make everyone think about really the cost to the state, and TIF is the cost of the state. I think there's $250 or $270 million a year in our tax expenditure part due to the existence of TIF. I have a bill this year to eliminate TIF. I mean, it's not going to happen, but I like to make the point that TIF in general is a subsidization program. But I think because we've got it here and we're trying to figure out a way to keep companies like Medtronic who are competing internationally, I applaud Representative Bernardi trying to do this. I would just throw this out to the committee, and I know Representative Vandeveer is trying to adjourn and still hear Representative Hillstrom's bill. Did you all know this, that the proposals out there for gaming include TIF for casinos? Now,
what?
I just want to draw your attention to this map here for Moundsview. The proposed casino in Bloomington is about the same size, square footage, and would require tens of millions of dollars of TIF. So I sure hope on that continuum that this Minnesota legislature is not going to allow gambling facilities to have TIF. So, I mean, we can certainly, we see the problems even in a legitimate company with Medtronic and trying to create jobs, and we're already kind of picking apart the TIF there, and we've done it to a lot of Minnesota companies. Yet on the continuum of what people might want to support in this state, we've got bills that say large casinos as big as this map are going to get TIF if they pass this year. So relative on that continuum, I think Medtronic looks pretty modest. And I think we'd like to try to help that, but I understand the concerns that Representative Simpson and Representative Krinke are raising, and I think it's up to Representative Bernardi, really, to put the onus on her to find a way to get this done, and there are those who want to try to help.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Riccovino.
A number of those points, and I'll be quick because Representative I see Carlson is here. I think the bill needs a little work. I think we all realize from the governor on down that we have to help Medtronic keep these jobs in Minnesota. I wasn't being facetious about IRRRB money, by the way. And regarding what you just said, that there's TIF money in both of those gambling bills, or one of them, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Or Representative Krinke, that means the tax bill has to come to, or the gaming bill has to come to the tax committee.
Members, I do have a lot of questions about this, too, that I'd like to ask. And I know, Representative Bernardi, you're still working on the bill, so I think we're going to lay over the layover, however we do that, and ask you to come back at a different time, because we do have to be done by 11:30, and this is important to all of us, Medtronic is, and we want to make sure we have time to get our questions answered. So why don't we, how do I do that? Okay, so we'll lay the bill over for now, and when you're ready, let us know, and we'll love to have you back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Next up on the agenda is House File 825.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 825 be recommended. Perhaps for possible inclusion in your omnibus recommendation bill.
Thank you, Representative. Rukavina moves House File 825 be considered for possible inclusion in the Property and Local Tax Division report. Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm pinch hitting here today for Representative Hillstrom, but just so everybody knows the project we're talking about, this would be project or TIF district number 3 in Brooklyn Center. It's the Brookdale complex, which many of you might be familiar with, and it's the last of the major shopping centers in the Twin Cities to be redone. And there have been, as a result of a variety of events, some delays, and therefore the request for an extension. And I do have the Mayor Gregness, with me that will do the lead testimony, and then we have two staff people, the city manager and the economic development staff person with us if there are questions. So I'll turn it over, if that's right, Mr. Chairman, to Mayor Craigness.
Certainly. Welcome, Mayor. Could you state your name for the record?
Good morning. My name is Myrna Craigness, K-R-A-G-N-E-S-S. I'm the mayor of Brooklyn Center. And thank you for having us here this morning. The City of Brooklyn Center has been working to redevelop Brookdale and surrounding areas for a number of years. Our efforts have been delayed for several reasons. Ownership of the Brookdale Mall was not resolved until late in 1997. Negotiations for a redevelopment took several years, and the new owners delayed their project and target dates for completion until the end of 2004. In 2004, Brookdale ownership went into default, and a receiver was appointed at the beginning of this year. The foreclosing bank has approached the city about development of a plan to reposition the property, which remains the single largest taxpayer in the City of Brooklyn Center. The city previously entered into an agreement with Brookdale ownership that would have provided tax increment assistance only upon completion of the project. Acting cautiously, we did not provide any funds to the now defaulted ownership. This bill would give us the ability to participate in overcoming some of the obstacles that face the bank and its trustees in repositioning Brookdale. Additionally, redevelopment of the surrounding areas has been impacted by the inability to resolve the location of the Metropolitan Transit Hub until its opening late in 2004. Until the hub's opening, we had curb cuts and buses blocking business visibility. The city has proceeded in a cautious and deliberate manner in this TIF district. We also participated in a study funded by the Metropolitan Council to better identify the productive and viable redevelopment options that would fit the marketplace. This study involved community meetings to develop more strategic visions for redevelopment in this area that are leading us in a new direction for redevelopment. House File 825 would allow us to continue in this deliberate, studied fashion to stimulate and support redevelopment. There are several substandard buildings and vacant areas that need redevelopment in this district. With a three-year extension within which to expend funds, we can approach this redevelopment with the same deliberateness that we have previously used. We are not seeking to extend or expand the district, just the opportunity to accomplish the redevelopment that has been frustrated by these delays.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I did mention we have Mike McCauley with me to my left, who's the city manager, and then we have Brad Hoffman, who's community development director as well, to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 825? Okay. Seeing none, did you have any additional comments, Representative Carlson?
No, other than to thank the committee for your time, and we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That being the case, the chair will, Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 825 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House or the Property and Local Tax Division report. And with that, members, we do have
I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Krinke moves the minutes from the Thursday, March 17th meeting. Is there any additions or subtractions? Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes?